We are in full swing into the holiday season and winding down on season three. Randy Halsey here with another amazing guest today on Backstage Pass Radio. My guest today is from a seaside town in the East Lindsay district of Lincolnshire and has been rocking for over 50 years. He has played in some of the most well-respected bands on the planet and has also played with some of the guitar greats. We will catch up with Graham Bonnet, and we will do that in 3, 2, 1.
This is Backstage Pass Radio, the podcast that's designed for the music junkie with a thirst for musical knowledge. Hi, this is Adam Gordon, and I want to thank you all for joining us today. Make sure you like, subscribe, and turn alerts on for this and all upcoming podcasts. And now, here's your host of Backstage Pass Radio, Randy Halsey.
I am joined by the one and only Graham Bonnet. Graham, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. It's nice to be awake, actually. It's quite early in the morning for me, but I'm okay, and it's good.
Good.
Wake up.
Good. Well, when I talked to Michelle, first of all, a shout out to Michelle, who helped us get this chat facilitated, right. And she said his team and him are looking for something in the morning. So I said, well, that's peculiar because most musicians don't want to wake up too early in the morning. So
yeah,
here we are at 10:30 your time and lunchtime here in Houston, Texas. So thanks so much for taking time to chat with me today. I appreciate that.
No problem at all.
How is life these days kind of post-COVID? You know, people are starting to move around a bit. Post-COVID, have you picked up steam? Did you ever have a slowdown during COVID? Talk to the listeners a little bit about what's happening with you, and are you busier now than you were a year ago, or has things kind of been the same all along the way throughout COVID?
Well, you know, when the COVID thing hit, I had a really bad problem. I split up with Bethany, my girlfriend. I was living on my own in my old condo in Santa Clarita, and the COVID thing really brought me down because I wasn't seeing anybody. Nobody was coming to see me. I wasn't seeing anybody. I was all on my own. And ideas came to my head about, you know, writing songs. Well, later on, when the COVID thing ended, I mean, I was really ill. I got really bad. I started drinking and crawling around the apartment and I'm glad nobody was there, making a real a mistake, let me say that, because I stopped drinking. I'm in AA now. But I stopped drinking for a long, long time. But then when this happened, I would go to the supermarket and see all this liquor was, you know, going off the shelf so quickly. And I was part of that. I was helping the business go along. And I started drinking again. And I haven't drunk, you know, I had like 15 years of, you know, sobriety. So the COVID thing hit me badly. And I was alone and people not coming over because of, you know, I remember going to the store and wiping down the bottles of milk or whatever, everything to make sure they were clean.
Yes.
So nobody's coming over and say, hey, Graham, how you doing? I was alone. And what happened was I got ideas come to my head about writing again, writing songs. And what happened was Bethany and I, to make a short story longer, it's really a short story. I'm babbling on.
You're good. You're good.
We got back together again, as you know, I'm here. And she said, you should start writing, you know, a new album. And that's exactly what happened. So I started working with Conrad Pesonato, my old friend, who was in one of the earlier versions of the band I was in, and with Bethany. So the three of us started writing stuff, and that was great. You know, the COVID thing was kind of, you know, not so difficult at the time. We were going out and wearing masks everywhere, but it was not so bad. And it was a good time because I think we made a great record this time. Yeah. I think it's really the best thing we've done, the Graham Bonnet Band.
Yes. Yes.
So I think, you know, the experience of this, what went on, you know, during this, the loss of just being a normal person, going outside and doing anything you wanted to, made me concentrate on subjects for the songs, you know?
Yes.
So I think what the content of the album, I think, is pretty cool because people say, oh, what's that about? What's that about? And I always like to write about something that's not obvious, if you know what I mean, something really I wrote one about for my dad and my brother about Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And that was the Michael Schenker Band. And it's called The Beast That Hides in the Shadows. And it's about that horrible disease that took my brother and took my dad. My dad was 92. My brother was 73, younger than me.
Wow.
You know, the age I am now. So I write about subjects that are sort of not, what can we say, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That usual, you know, all that kind of stuff. I try to find the subjects that I've learned about or seen or experienced, you know. So that was all coming to me while we were still in the COVID thing, but we got serious about really writing something good. And I think the three of us came up with something great. I'm very, very pleased with the new album.
We'll talk about that in more detail. And I agree, the album's great. I have it right here. I added it to my vinyl collection. So we'll talk about that a little bit more. It's interesting that you say that, and I promised to not go down a rabbit hole about this, but I did want to touch on it. I was a cigarette smoker all of my life, and I quit some 10 years ago. You mentioned alcohol, and do you feel like, and for me, I stopped drinking because I felt like that lent to wanting to smoke cigarettes. So I was wondering was it the COVID kind of like a depression, a depression during the COVID period that moved you back to drinking again, or what lured you back to that after being sober for so many years?
Yeah, it was exactly that. You know, so I don't want to feel like this all day. Oh, Bethany, what did you say, Bethany?
It was Alcatraz.
It was Alcatraz. Yeah, Alcatraz, not alcohol. Everything went wrong. You know, the band was, I split with the band, Alcatraz. Bethany and I split up. And as I said, I went into the supermarket and I saw the bottles were flying off the shelf. And I thought, well, I wonder if I will feel better if I wake up in the morning and take a shot of brandy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a shot of brandy. It was a bottle of brandy.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, crap. I go to sleep and then I go out and buy some more liquor.
Yeah.
Because it was taken away from, like all alcoholics, it takes you away from reality.
Absolutely.
And, if you can't deal with reality, what's the best thing to do? It's a quick fix.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible way to, you know, to actually to live through the day. Yes. I now find out, being sober, that this is the best time ever.
Absolutely.
Know, because I can think clearly. I sometimes can't speak very clearly, but I can think clearly.
Yeah.
That what's in my head now, what we've done, you know, created, to me, I think the best album we've done, as I said. You know, it's nice to be in the world instead of somewhere else floating around and everything's really great, isn't it? You know, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to that place again.
Steven Tyler said that years ago. He said, we floated around, like you said, in a fog for 30 years, high out of our minds, and wrote some of the best music ever. Yeah. And how we did it, I have no clue. But we somehow wrote hit songs. And all of, you know, the drunkenness and the being high and the everything that they were doing, it's unbelievable how the brain will even think during times like that.
Oh, yeah.
But somehow.
I remember I would get a bottle of wine to write one damn song, you know, and that would make me go into another space where I could think about something that isn't very obvious or whatever, you know, some kind of fantasy or something like that. So, you know, that was that's the way it is with alcoholics. And it's hard to think that I made such a fool of myself. You know, I'm embarrassed about how I was, what I did, how I apologized to everybody. The bad things I did, the bad things I said.
Sure.
How I treated Bethany, for instance.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, not really listening to her.
Yeah.
I was listening to myself and nobody else.
Sure.
I was the most important thing in the fucking world.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that's what alcohol does. You become this thing, but you don't really care about anything.
Yeah.
As long as you're high.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is you've acknowledged that it was a problem and you're fixing the problem, and that's what matters, right? And if you're feeling good right now, keep up the great work. I do wish you the best with that, because I know dependencies, whether it's drugs or alcohol or cigarettes or whatever the vice is, they're...
How long were you smoking for?
All my life, ever since I was a teenager, you know?
So you stopped now, though?
Right? I stopped 10 years ago, and I haven't touched it since. And I said I'm not going to, because the first one I pick up, Graham, it's like that bottle of brandy. I'm going to start with the shot, and before you know it, it's the whole fucking bottle, right? And you don't want that. So if you just stay away from it, you can't go back to it. It's kind of my mindset there. So
It's when you stop drinking, it's like losing a lover, you know.
Sure, I get it.
It was my best friend, my best lover. I loved it. It was, it cuddled me.
I get it.
I find now that being, awake and seeing the world, the real world, a new pair of glasses, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought I'll never be able to write a song. But of course I can, and I'm really proud of what I did.
Yes,
with Conrad and Bethany.
Absolutely,
they appreciate me.
Yeah,
I say, well, read these words. What do you think? And Graham, that's fucking great. And when I hear that, I think, yes, I can write songs with a clear mind. I don't have to be shit faced.
Exactly. Well, I have to say, you look great for a 54-year-old, Graham, so kudos to you for that. I was going to ask you, are there any interests or hobbies outside of music that keep you going these days? And the reason I ask is because I had a nice conversation with Fee Wabel from the Tubes early on when I started my show, and he's a big polo player, right? That's what he spends a lot of his time doing. So I didn't know if there was any interest outside of the music world for you these days.
Well, I haven't ridden my bike for 3 years. I have terrible arthritis, which is severe in my shoulders. Okay. I've had a knee replacement. I've fallen to pieces, basically. And I wanted to ride my bike again, but I got on my bike, I guess it's about almost a year ago, and I fell off because my balance was gone, because I need to use my body. You need to turn. But I go out in the traffic, I don't go, it's just road riding. I used to ride for 30 miles a day.
Yeah.
And that was my thing every day. But now, because of my age and crumbling bones, I can't I can't do what I want to.
I hear you.
I'm getting it back. I've got, in this room, I've got a bicycle.
Stationary.
A training bike, whatever you call them. One of those things. So I ride that every day to get my legs stronger again. And they are getting stronger, which is something I need. It's just this turning, but that's my sport.
Yeah, good.
I miss terribly.
Yeah.
My bike is out there now. I look at it every day and go, oh shit, I want to get on this thing and ride.
Yep.
Because, I bought myself a nice new bike, a Trek, and they're like thousands of dollars.
Oh yeah.
This one was $4,000.
Yeah.
And you don't kind of go, you've got to take care of it.
Absolutely.
And it's not being used.
Yeah.
That bike that I love is missing me as much as I miss it.
Well, and for $4,000, that's even more incentive for you to get on the stationary bike, get yourself back in working condition and get out on that bike.
Yeah. I mean, that is my, I guess, my hobby, my sport, whatever you want to call it, outside what I do.
Yeah.
But I love, well, I guess I play guitar. I'll never be a widdly widdly man. But I always find when I pick up the guitar every day, you always find out something new. There's always a new chord that you invent yourself.
That's right.
And I say to a comrade, do this. And he will say, okay, I'll translate that to electric.
Yeah.
So I always make up tunes on my little Hofner guitar, which is really light
and
lovely. I've got to deal with those guys, I've been playing Hofner since I was a kid, by the Beatles. They had Hofner guitars when they were in their teens.
Sure.
And so that's my, I guess it's not my hobby, that is my life, is music. But that's another thing I do. I'll never be a widdly widdly player.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of chords, I know a lot of progressions. And that's where the songs come from.
Yeah.
So that's a tool for me. It's not because I want to be a great guitar player. It's a tool for my singing.
Well, and I was going to say, your tool is your voice. That's what you're really good at. And
exactly,
and the guitar is secondary. You've had a career that has spanned many decades, and you have earned the respect as one. I mean, when I told people, when I kind of posted about the show and you coming up on the show, everybody started responding like, oh man, that is so awesome that you're going to have Graham on the show. He's like one of the best. So You're highly revered from the musical community, at least locally here where I am, because there's a lot of Graham Bonnet fans. I wanted to ask you, though, when did the music mayhem start for Graham Bonnet? Were you a young kid, or did it come later in life for you? Talk to the listeners a little bit about when you got the music bug.
When I was a seven-year-old kid, the radio would be on all day, and there was a guy called Mario Lanza, who I worship to this day. He was the most amazing voice I've ever heard. I've been looking at his, his movies and stuff last week or this week or whatever. And I listen to that voice and I think, how the hell did he do that? How the hell did that power? Where did that come from? And so I would hear that on the radio when I'm a little kid. And I go around going, ah! You know, doing this, you know. And my mom and dad used to laugh because I'm doing this big voice.
Sure.
And they're going, Graham, what? You're singing Mario Lanza songs, you know, because that was what was on the radio when I was young in the 1950s.
Okay.
There's Perry Como, right. Mario Lanza, Rosemary Clooney,
you know,
all that stuff that wasn't really rock and roll.
Sure.
Until Buddy Holly and Little Richard came along a little bit later.
Yeah. I was going to say it was interesting to read that you're not really a trained vocalist, right? Is the vocal thing just something that you were born with this and you just went out and developed it on your own? Or was there any formal training along the way at all?
No, as I was saying, when I was a kid, I didn't walk around singing Perry Como songs. I was listening to Mario Lanza, which I have on my telephone. I listened to that guy and I just, he's got the most incredible voice. I mean, I know he's gone, he's died, but he has the most incredible voice I've ever heard. The power, it's all, you know, it's from the whole body. You know what I mean? It's the whole damn thing. And he keeps on drinking. Now, he can't go anywhere else with this, but he did. And I tried to copy that as a young child. But then when Little Richard came along, I wanted to sing like him, you know, all that, that growly thing. I just couldn't. I had this operatic thing in my head, and that was it. And I remember on the school bus, I would get up and sing to the kids. They'd say, oh, Graham, you're going to sing to us today. And so I'd sing something, or like a Paul Anka song or whatever, you know. And I tried to sing, but it never sounded right. Because my voice was young. You know, I was a young kid.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get
Makes
that
sense.
Tone.
Yeah.
But later on in my life, I remember doing a track and with Rainbow. And Roger Glover said to me, he was producing this, the album I was on, The Rainbow. And he was producing this, and he came out and he said, Little Richard Lives. It's a track called Lost in Hollywood. And so that was the last thing I recorded with them before I flew back to L.A.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, at last, I got that sort of that sound, you know. But I never thought I would. He said that edgy, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud to have that.
Yes.
But also I have the other bit as well. I have a smooth voice, you know.
Yes.
I alternate between voices. And I'm lucky to be able to do that. I remember in England doing commercials, and the guy said to me, I like using you because you sound like three people or four people. You can do it, you can do this, you can do that. And then, you know, put the commercial together.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sort of showing off a bit here, but
that's good.
Sort of have not one way of singing.
Yeah.
I was in a dance band when I was 15.
Yeah.
So I'll be singing, she gets too hungry, or dinner. You know, I'm doing that, you know. And then when I was 15 and a bit, I thought, I can't do this anymore. So I put a band together, a garage band, and we went out doing Beatles songs and whatever, rock and roll.
Yeah.
So, I'm just very lucky with I can get different tones and whatever, you know. I think it sort of comes from my family. My mom was a singer. She was like Patti Page or something like that, you know, of that era. And she sang all the time in the kitchen, wherever. And my uncles were trumpet players. So very musical family. So at Christmas, everybody would do their bit. My uncles would play their trumpets, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then one of my aunts had an accordion. It was like a folk group.
Right.
And then I would do my bit.
We had talked a little bit kind of pre-hitting the record button here about, you know, getting a little older and, you know, every day we age. But I was going to say that, you know, of course, none of us are getting any younger. But from a vocal perspective, And I'll tell you the reason I'm asking the question in a second, but would you say that your vocals are just as strong today as they were 20 years ago? Have you lost range? Because I'm a vocalist, a performer yeah. here, and yeah. Sometimes I have to tune down a little bit, and you know, but I've talked to other singers like Johnny Gioeli, who is a phenomenal vocalist, says, man, Randy, you know, my voice is stronger now than it was 20 years ago. So tell the listeners about your voice now versus, you know, when you were, you know, say back in the early days of, you know, Alcatraz or even Rainbow, right back from that time.
Well, I mean, it's something that's, Roger Glover wrote to me. He looked at the videos we did, the new song, and he wrote me a letter, you know, an email. One of the things he said was, you sound as good as you were in Rainbow, if not better. Mm-hmm. I think I've got more range than I had then.
Yeah.
You know, it's stayed with me, you know, and I could do falsetto better than I used to do. Okay. I could never do falsetto, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it that much anyway, but I tried to always sing in real voice. You know, it comes from the chest and it comes from here.
The diaphragm.
When I'm recording, I look at this invisible note in my head. Okay, this is going to be a D, which is very high above top C. So that's my highest note, it's a D. So I'm showing off again. Yeah. So I've got to take a really deep breath, fill my lungs, and then I'll hit that D. But I see the note floating in the air in my imagination.
Sure.
I see it there and I go, and then I go for it. And if I don't do that, I'll slip.
Yeah.
It's really weird, but it's all from here. You got to really take a deep breath.
Yep.
And then push it out.
Crazy. Yep.
Yeah.
For
and
sure.
It's something I've kind of learned through the years with singing different kinds of music, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky. I was in a dance band playing guitar and singing. And not rock and roll at all.
Yeah.
But it taught me a way. It taught me a way to sing like, let's see, like Sammy Davis, for instance.
Okay. Yeah.
He was a great singer. You know, great crooner.
Crooner, yeah.
And I used to sing a couple of his songs. You know, I can't think of one now. But you know, I was doing standards, standards.
Yes.
And I remember one night, I was 14 or 14 and a bit. And I play guitar. Then my band leader would say, Graham, put the guitar down and go and sing this Sammy Davis song or something. Or I Left My Heart in San Francisco or whatever. And somebody came up to me and the band leader and said, I had long hair and I just had to comb it back with grease. Anyway, that's another thing. She said, he's got such a powerful voice for such a young man. And that Peter, the leader of the band, said, yes, he has. I just wish he'd have his hair cut. Because I was into the Beatles.
Okay, yeah.
I wanted to sing She Loves You and all that stuff.
Right.
Please, please me. But when you do it in a dance band, it doesn't sound good.
Exactly.
It's too ploddy. You know, the guitar ball with kick, you know, and it's not that. It's rhythmic, more rhythmic. But the parts that are written for, arrangements of a band, they're all very, you know, clinical, I should say. And so you see the little dick on the, you know, on the lines, yes, on the five lines there. Yeah, so I remember that a lot of people said, he's just a kid, but he's got a big voice.
Is one of those types of music easier or harder for you to sing? Is the rock and roll harder to sing than the dance music, or is it the other way around? Or do both just come naturally and easy to you?
They don't come, well, I guess they come naturally, but you have to really think about it, you know. But what I'm doing right now, I'm recording today, we're doing, it's from Abbey Road. We're making an album of Abbey Road, all the album with different singers. And I've got You Never Give Me Your Money, that song. So the beginning of that is kind of croony, but it's a song that I started yesterday. I've just got one little bit to do on it. I've got four lines to do on it today. That's the beginning. So I've done all the other bits. That's that middle rocky bit.
Yep.
And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, got a weird ending. But it's turning out pretty good, I think. But I'm using that other voice, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't find it difficult. But if I'm not awake enough, I lose vibrato for the warmer tones. and stuff like that. But rock and roll, you know, you can scream in rock and roll.
Yeah.
You can, you know, cover it up with having a croaky voice or whatever. But, you know, we stopped yesterday. I said to Conrad, he was engineering. I said to him, look, Conrad, my voice is getting tired now. We've been in there for like, I don't know, 3 hours or something. And he said, yeah, I can hear that. It's only a little bit, but you're all right. You're still speaking. Yeah, yeah. But I can hear a bit of a crackle.
Yeah.
Because it came to us through the smooth part of the song. That's the beginning.
Yes.
You never give me your money. Yeah, that bit.
Mm-hmm.
Da, 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 da. And then it goes to the rock one. Da, 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 da. No, of course, you know, rocky sort of thing. And it's not in my key. It's too low. It's a bit too low.
Okay.
But it will sound okay, I think. Because you get, if you have something that is a bit out of your range, it's another color.
Yes,
you know?
I agree with that. You were in a few acts that led up to your joining of Rainbow. I think it was 1979-ish, somewhere around there when you joined Rainbow. Talk to me about the time in Rainbow and maybe how it changed the way people looked at you as a singer. Was there more respect once you got into Rainbow, like you were in a big name band like that, or did you really not see a change from all the people or the bands leading up to Rainbow? Does that question make sense to you?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, because before Rainbow, me and my cousin were a duo called the Marbles,
mm-hmm.
and the songs that we sang, we had two hit records in England, and they were never released here. I'll never understand why. And people called us the English Righteous Brothers, if you will.
Okay.
So I had the high part, my cousin had the lower part in the songs. But what got me the job in Rainbow was this one song. They were playing a game. It's a long story. They were playing a game. They were looking for a singer. They auditioned, I believe, 80 people. And one night, Koji said, let's play Spot the Tune. And so he puts his cassette machine down. Remember those?
Yeah.
That down. And my song came up with my cousin, which is in 1968, was my first recording.
Okay.
With Barry Gibb and Robin Gibb and Morris.
Yep.
They weren't on the, they played, the band played the backing track that was all orchestra added. And Richie said, where is this guy now? So, and somebody said, oh, I think he's lost his voice or whatever. Anyway, that's how I got the interview, the audition. And so Roger was working with a friend of mine, Mickey Moody, with Whitesnake. And we're all managed by the same people. And so Mickey Moody gave Roger Glover my number. And he said, will you come over to audition? And I learned a song called Mistreated. And that was my audition song. And I thought, okay. So I sang this song to them, not on the microphone. I sang way away from the microphone because I thought, I'm probably going to mess this up. And the mic was in the middle of the floor in this beautiful room in this chateau. You know, they're all there, drums and everything all set up and blasting. I thought, well, if I just sing it off the mic, they won't hear me fuck up. You know, they won't hear my mistakes.
Right.
So I sang it. And when the song came to an end, they were all laughing. And I thought, what's happened? And they looked at each other and they laughed. It. We can hear you over this martial anthem, whatever.
Sure.
The drums.
Wow.
We can hear you singing. I said, yeah.
Well, was it good?
Was it good? And they went, yeah. So I did it again. I said, listen, let's do it again. So we did it again. And again, I was off the microphone just in case I went, oh, you know, screwed up and my voice cracked, whatever. And then, yeah, okay. And Don Airy said, Graham, try this time on the microphone. Try on the microphone. So we did it three times. So I tried it on the microphone. And as I was singing on this mic, everything went good, you know, no problems. And suddenly all the other people that were in the chateau at the time, there was a balcony. We were in the lower part of this house. And we, you know, the drums set up and everything. And I looked up, and all of a sudden, all their girlfriends came out and were leaning over the balcony and looking and giving their approval of
sure.
what they heard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They were going, this is the guy.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I'm not right for this because I've never, you know, played this music before, sang this before, you know, this kind of so-called heavy, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
And so I went home to my to London that time. I went home to London and I said to my manager, I don't think I fit in this at all. I don't have the long hair, blah, blah, blah. You know, I've got my 1950s suit on with a tie. You know, I don't look like these guys for one thing.
Yeah.
And the music to me is a little bit foreign. I don't understand what's happening with it, where it goes, and et cetera. Because they played me some of the arrangements on the bloody hell. It was all sort of classical sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, no, Graham, you've got to do it. He said, this will be a big boost for your career. At the time, I was like doing commercials and whatever, playing in some clubs in London. And I said, really? It was a boost for his fucking career, I know that. He made more money out of it than I did.
You're right.
And so anyway, yeah, I saw nothing from Rainbow. This is that's another horror story. But anyway, so I went back and we started recording the songs in a studio, in a real studio in Syosset in America, on the East Coast. We got the songs together and we did four versions of every song. Like Eyes of the World was something else. I can't remember what it's called now. But anyway, all the songs were all different. They had a different verse, a different chorus, and a different middle end. You know, so we did them all differently to play to Richie when mm-hmm. he came in.
Yeah.
To add his guitar. The guitar parts were always put down last. The rhythm guitar was there, but, you know, the actual, yes. you know, all that. So he would pick whichever track he likes best, version of the track he liked best, and we'd do that. And that's how the whole album was done.
Wow.
So Roger would say to me, okay, Graham, well, he would point out to me where I should come in. I would do a la-la, you know, da-da-da-da, you know, a la-la vocal. He said, yes, you should come in there, and then here, and then here. And so that's how we did it. It was like painting by numbers or something.
Yeah.
Wow. But Roger really gave me a clue how to get into this music, to know where the vocal should come,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I really didn't. It's all
right.
I don't need a vocal.
Well, you walked into a band with some world-class musicians there, you know, yeah. Richie and Roger Glover, Cozy Powell, Don Airey, all during that time, right? And I know Don Airey went on and played a little stint with Ozzy Osbourne and probably many, yeah. many others. But have you been thinking that you may need a little exercise in your daily routine while having a little fun doing it? I may have the solution. Hey, it's Randy Holsey here with Backstage Pass Radio. And about 6 months ago, I purchased an electric bike from EcoTrick and just thought about using it as a way to kind of get the blood flowing a few days a week. And to my surprise, I find myself on the bike just about every day. Not only am I getting a little exercise each day, but I'm also having a fun time seeing the neighborhood and maybe some areas that I probably would never have seen before I got the bike. Today, my family owns four of these EcoTrick bikes, and we're looking to add a few more soon. Make sure to check out the link in the description below for more details. You ultimately replaced Ronnie James Dio in the band, and did that make a vocalist of your caliber? Like, did you ever feel like, geez, these are some big shoes to fill, or was that just an easy transition to walk right in there and not even think about who you were replacing in that band?
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons I didn't think the band was right for me, because the vocalist was nothing like me. I thought, well, I don't sing like that. You know, I have a different voice. You know, I thought, I didn't really think about it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I thought, well, oh, okay, I've got the job. Blah, blah, blah. I've got the job. We'll make this record and that's it. But tours happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, fuck. I've never been on a tour before. How long is it? You know, 4 months. What? 4 months? Bloody hell. You know, I've never done a tour okay. at all.
At all, yeah, life. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, jeez. So but I remember what happened because of the way I look, the way I sing. I remember one of the first coming in Binghamton. I knew wherever it was a big freaking stadium. And I'm looking at this, I'm going, fuck, oh, jeez, I'm going out there soon to sing. And I remember we did Eyes of the World as the opening song. And I could see these guys down there doing this.
Yeah.
Where's Ronnie? And then the Ronnie thing started on the front line.
Okay.
Anyway, we went on and Richie started playing a D chord. He started ding, ding, ding. I said, what are you doing? He says, will you still love me tomorrow? Will you still love me tomorrow? So these guys would give me the finger. I walked over to that side of the stage. I sat on the side of the stage, looked him right in the eye, and went, tonight you're mine completely. You know, straight at them. And they started laughing.
Really?
And I won them over.
Nice.
All these young kids, young punks, who thought I was a bit of a shit.
Yeah.
Because I had the hair and the... Oh, I look like a fucking bank manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were suddenly on my side. And they laughed because, you know, I was making fun of who I am, if you like.
Yeah.
Tonight you're mine completely.
Yeah.
You give your love so sweetly. Yeah.
Right.
To these guys.
Well, it's probably true. You know, you get some uneducated people out there that look at a dapper dressing guy like you, right? Filling in for or coming behind Ronnie James Dio. You're like two ships in the night. You're not even remotely the same type of people or anything. And so in all fairness, they probably judge the book by the cover, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, obviously did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after that first gig, everything went really well, you know, and it was the most amazing time in my life, I must say that. I had a band that I could rely on every night, that everything would go well. As soon as you walk on the stage, it was like walking into a warm living room, you know, and there are all those people out there. I heard them, but I didn't see them sometimes. And I felt... It was like a family. I was talking about having a family, like me and Bethany and Conrad. It was like being in a family. They were there. If I fucked up, they would cover for me.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever fucked up, really. It was always good.
Yeah.
Because I heard this fan behind me. It's like, holy cow, I'm going to give it the bollocks. I'm going to give it everything. And, you know, I look around, I see they're smiling, and I see the smiling faces down there, and it was, as I said, it's just always comfortable. I didn't have any fear about walking on stage anymore, about my hair, about what clothes I was wearing. It was like, I'm just me. I'm Graham.
Well, you relied on your...
Don't lie to me, you know.
You relied on your ability as a vocalist to go out and deliver, night after night. Well, it was also my understanding that you were asked to join the band Sweet, which I found that interesting because...
Yeah.
Sweet is probably one of, my all-time favorites. I was so into the whole, the 70s, glam stuff coming up, and that was big for me. How did that come about? And I think that was about the same time that you were joining Rainbow, correct? Didn't those kind of coincide? And how did you decide on one versus the other?
Yeah, it was my producer, Pitt Williams, produced Sweet, And all the guitars on their records is Pitt Williams playing. And Pitt plays on my earlier albums, And he said to me, we'll have a break now, Graham. You want to go over to the pub? I said, oh, yeah, okay. So we crossed over the road to the pub, and there was Sweet in not the singer, but the other guys from Sweet, standing by the bar. And Pitt says to me, these are the guys. Oh, yeah, how are you? How are you? And they said to me, how would you feel about... We're asking you to be in our band. They asked me face to face. And I said, oh, and I don't know. I don't know. What? I said, I'm busy right now. I'm doing my solo stuff and all that. And I said, well, I think I'm going to stay solo as a solo singer. But they said, well, we'd really like you to be in our band. Anyway, I talked to Pitt later. I said, I can't really see myself doing that, Not because they weren't bad or good or whatever, but I didn't think I'd fit that band at all.
Yeah.
A bit like Rainbow, I wouldn't have fit. I wouldn't have improved the band or ruined the band or anything, whatever. I didn't think it was right. So that was that. But because of Pitt Williams producing them, that's how I got to meet them.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you had left Rainbow and you went on to join Michael Schenker and the Michael Schenker Group. And for the listeners that are going to be tuning in, Michael Schenker is the younger brother of Rudolph Schenker of the Scorpions. And so at this time in your career, you're now playing or have played with a couple of, what have become guitar legends, right? And I was curious from your point of view, kind of what the Was there a big difference in playing with a guy like Richie Blackmore and then going over and playing with Michael Schenker? And what would you say the differences in the two guys were?
Michael is his arrangements sometimes would go on forever. The songs would last like 10 minutes. And that's where Cozy used to come in and edit the song. They said, no, cut that bit out. Whereas Richie had he seemed to have a fixed idea. But both of them are just so damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, how come Graham Bonnet from Skegness, Lincolnshire, suddenly...
Are you here with these guys, right?
Yeah. We're suddenly surrounded by... I'm going, why am I here? You know, yeah. It was like... And then Michael Schenker, I'm going, wow, this guy is so different. Mm-hmm. They're so different from Richie. But there were, you know, little bits of, you know, they both had a similarity in some ways. But so Richie was very much the British guitar player, whereas Michael was more sort of Germanic, and he had these arrangements which were they lasted forever. You know, oh crap, when does this thing end? You know, where do I sing?
It was like a meat. It was like a meatloaf song, right? That just It was like a rock opera or whatever, right?
Yeah. Like a show song.
Yes.
Yeah. I love meatloaf songs.
Yeah, I do too.
But yeah, in the Bob, bless his heart, he's gone. Yeah, we lost a lot of people over the past couple of years. Yeah. But the two of them, I'd love to see them playing together. You know, trading. You know, licks. You know?
Yes.
They both had respect for each other. By the way,
yeah,
he really did. I mean, Richie loved Michael's playing,
good,
and vice versa.
Yeah,
but it was with Michael, it was quite an adventure because I said to him, "Well, I don't really write lyrics or anything, you know." So the first time I really started lyrics in my own melodies was with Michael. He said, "Well, Glenn, I don't speak the English very well, so I want you to write the words and the melody."
Yeah,
I'm doing a very bad Michael Schenker.
Actually, you were doing a pretty good little German accent there, Graham. It's like you kind of practiced that before the show, didn't you?
I'm French as well, but you never know. I remember sitting down at rehearsal. Everybody's rehearsing, and it was a song that eventually we called a desert song. And I said, I don't know what to write. It says, write anything. So I'm going, what? I don't know what to. So I got my pad there, you know. And then this song came into my head with the. I don't like a fantasy thing about being on a camel riding across the desert. You know, well, that's what you're supposed to write in a band like this. Right. So it'd be a bit mystical and weird, you know. So that was the first lyric I ever wrote was the desert song, sitting in the rehearsal room with them blasting away. And then I, at the end of my, like next day or whatever, when I finished it, I gave the lyrics to Michael. And he just said, this is great, but what is a dusky lady? He had one question. He loved a dusky lady. Or another, you know, he had one question about that. So it means she's dark and sensual and, you
sure.
know. Oh, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
That was the only thing he said, but the words are great. And I said, well, I did them very quickly. And then, anyway, after that, I started to really concentrate on the words I was writing. And later on, I think I developed my poetry, if you will, a lot better. You know, when I got out of the Michael Schenker band and went into my own band, yep. Alcatraz. Yep. You know, I became more imaginative, I think. But it was good to have Michael say to me, I don't write words and I don't write melodies. He really made me do it.
Sure. Kind of stepped out of your comfort zone, so to speak, right? Yeah. And forced you to do that.
And, the album turned out great. We do a couple of Michael Schenker songs, of course.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Sure.
I have to.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love him. I love the guy. He's insane.
Yeah.
But I love him. He is. He's a beautiful guy. He really is. Really, really is. But he's one of those guys you can't understand sometimes. He's, oh, no, leave me alone, you know. A bit like Richie. Richie's a very shy person. A lot of fans said, oh, Richie didn't sign my album. I said, no, because he wants to go to bed. You know, when you get home, you know, late, you know, it's 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Going to the hotel lobby and there's all these kids or whatever.
Yeah.
I said, no, he's a good man. He really is. But he's a very shy person.
Yeah.
You know, watch his space, you know. And when he's been working, give him a break.
That kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, Neil Peart from Rush. He was always very shy. and they had written a song called Limelight. And in that song, it says something about, I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend, meaning I'm adored by so many, and so many come up to me after the show. They all seem to know me, but I don't know any of them. So it was always really weird to him.
Yeah.
And he shied away from that limelight, much like it sounds like Richie did. It's not that he was trying to be a dick, right? He just didn't want, you know, he just wanted his space, and he wanted separation from that, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. He just wanted to go upstairs and watch TV if you're in a hotel.
Yeah.
But that's who he was. I mean, he chose, he had a few friends, but he had a very small group of friends. You know, he chose them very carefully. He became my friend and my dad's friend.
Yeah.
My dad loved him. And so when we're in like a Holiday Inn or something, and my dad was there coming to some of our shows in England, he would go and sit at the bar with Richie.
Yeah.
See, see Richie gabbing away with my dad, who's a farmer, a Lincolnshire farmer.
Sure.
And but they had a great time to it. I see them laughing. I'm going to my mom and going, what are they talking about? You know, oh, I don't know.
Well, I have to say that I love what him and Candace do together in Blackmore's Night. I really like that type of music. And so kudos to them for that. Now, We fast forward to somewhere, I think, around 1983, you formed Alcatraz, and you once again found yourself kind of surrounded by guitar greatness. There's this guitar greatness thing that follows Graham Bonnet around a little bit, that being Yngwie Malmsteen and Steve Vai. As a musician, were you able to spread out a little bit more in Alcatraz than you were in Rainbow or the Michael Schenker group? Were you able to do a little bit more Graham Bonnet type things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause some of the melodies on that guitar parts or rhythm parts, I wrote the song, you know, I can't remember which ones I did now, but I wrote a couple of songs on that first album, you know, the arrangements and the whole bit. And then Yngwie played on, you know, his way. I mean, Yngwie Malmsteen, what a find that was. I mean, that was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He used to come over to my house every day, and we'd sit down there and just talk about music. But what was the question again?
I was just curious if you were able to spread out and explore more of who you were as a musician in Alcatraz than you were maybe some of the previous two outfits that you were with.
Yes. Right? Yeah, because these couple of guys in the band were like fans of Rainbow or whatever. And when I had Alcatraz, I could write any kind of lyric I liked, any kind of melody, and they wouldn't complain.
Okay.
You know, do you know what I mean? They had respect for me in that way. You know, oh, what's this lyric? You know, but a lot of people didn't understand my lyrics, but I just said, well, read it. It's a story, you know. That's one thing. I never had any problem at all with Alcatraz. Yngwie would ask me where he wanted to put guitars and things. So me and Yngwie worked together a lot, you know. And when I did my things, my arrangements, he would say, well, yeah, that's good. He would copy them exactly.
Really?
He didn't bugger them up. He didn't fuck with them at all.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I get it, Graham. And so he would do it. But of course, later on, things changed.
Yes, yeah.
Yngwie became this monster of, guitar hero thing. And he was all over the stage every night, and watching him.
Yeah.
And I can't compete with that. No, a vocalist cannot compete with that.
No.
You know, it's a visual thing.
Yes.
A vocalist isn't.
It's a very show.
What's going on in here.
Yeah, it's very show.
You know what
show.
I mean?
Yeah.
It's very. So
I get it.
I was thinking, well, what the hell is he doing? I said, Yngwie, can you please have a bit of stage etiquette when I'm doing my bit? Don't come up to me or when I'm doing whatever. And he said, oh, okay. And of course, he didn't. It carried on being the same. Because, when you see a guitar player, you can see what they're playing.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing what he did. I mean, not many people were like him.
Yeah.
He was a one-off.
Yeah.
You got Van Halen and of course, Richie. But he was doing a bit more than those guys, you know. He was tall and a young man. So he got all people were turning towards him all the time instead of looking at me.
Yeah. The storyteller of the band,
well,
right?
That's a bit off.
Yeah, sure.
It was kind of a bit of an ego thing, you know, with me.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I can see that.
I'm singing the bloody song, and meanwhile, he started to play, like, melodies while I was singing my, let's say, a verse or something.
Yeah.
I would go, da, 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 and he'd go, behind me and doing all this. And of course, it distracted attention from what I was doing. So it was one of those times when we had to say, that's it.
Knock
this
it off.
This guy's got to go.
Yeah.
Especially one night he tried to strangle me. And this was, I've told this story a million times probably. And I'm sure Yngwie has heard it too. He was doing a solo. He was doing a guitar solo. And I went off stage and I didn't know this, but I pulled his lead out of the amp. And I didn't know. And I went to the bus and I was talking to the bus driver. And Yngwie comes rushing out. He said, "You're fucking cunt." He got hold of my neck and started squeezed right here. Really, really hard. Hit right on where my tonsils are and everything. Mm. And it was choking me, basically. Like this, I was gagging. And one of our crew was there, a big Yugoslavian kid who was a few years ago died, which is unfortunate, I heard. But he said, "Yngwie, come here, you bastard." And he got hold of Yngwie, put his head between his arms like this, got hold of Yngwie's head, says, "You fuck with Grandma Moore, and you're dead." And Yngwie said, okay, because he's really, it's a big guy. And he really was giving him what Yngwie was doing to me.
Sure.
He could have ruined my voice. He could have killed me.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure.
But he didn't kill me, I'm glad to say.
Wow.
But it was a pretty awful night. Then we traveled in the bus, and he was fired in the bus that night. Because you don't do that.
No.
You don't do that.
No, you can't be a cohesive unit and have that going on in the unit, no. Right? Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't mean to do it, obviously. It was an accident.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. I want to rewind just a little bit on your career. You had success before joining any of the bands I previously mentioned, and you made mention of this a little bit earlier, but you had a song that hit number 3 on the charts called "It's All Over Now, Baby Blue," and you also had a number 2 hit with a song called "Warm Ride," and I wanted to share a short clip of "It's All Over Now, Baby Blue" with the listeners, and then come back and just chat briefly about that song, if you don't mind. All right? Stand by. To admit that I've fallen in love with this cover song. And when I say cover, this was a song that was written by Bob Dylan, right? And covered by quite a few artists. I think Van Morrison might have covered it, and there was a few others.
Yeah.
But I'll have to say too, and it's not just because you're on my show, but this by far is the best cover of that song. But I wanted to ask you, how did you decide to do a cover of that song? Why was that song special to you?
I'll tell you. My cousin and I, the other guy in the Marbles, which we were called in 1968, Trevor used to come over and we'd play together, play guitars together. And I said, have you heard that song by Rod Stewart? And it's, I've forgotten the title of it.
I bet you're thinking of Maggie May, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes.
And I said, hear that rhythm. I said, yeah. I said, it's good, isn't it? And we were playing Baby Blue. I said, let's try it like that song.
Yeah.
And so I went to Pip Williams, my producer and guitar player, and I said, what do you think about doing it like Maggie May? You mercilessly, do it to... what's the words to Maggie May? I can't think.
Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to say.
I said, let's do it like that. I'll sing it sort of like that, mm-hmm. you know. And he said, what a great idea. And so that's how that came about in the arrangement. And then it was a fucking hit record. I was totally surprised by that.
That's a really cool story. And if my wife was, if Terry was to walk through those doors right now, I would ask her, tell Graham what I said just last night, because I had her listen to that song, and I said, that song is very Rod Stewart-ish, and it has kind of the making of Maggie May in it. I could hear some similarities throughout it, and I don't know if that bothers artists when you have a sound like somebody else, but that's a compliment as far as I'm concerned, because I'm a huge Rod Stewart fan. But I could detect, that's why I called it out.
Yeah.
Were you thinking of Maggie May? Because it had little remnants of that. It just had that feel to it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what I did. Yeah. Just say, play it like Maggie May, you know, and good old Rod.
Yeah.
I don't think it would mind.
No. And you did a great job of that song, too. And I wanted to say your song Warm Ride gave you some chart success, as I mentioned. There were a couple of things that stood out to me about the song, but one of them that was it written or co-written by the Bee Gees? That's the one that was written by Morris, Robin, and Barry, correct?
Yeah, they all had a hand in that. Robin was the original idea, and he came along. I got the demo from Barry. He gave me the demo, and I thought, well, I can't make any sense of this, because Robin, he didn't play anything. He would just sing something. He played the melodic, you know, one of those things that he played that once in a while, but he sang, and he was trying to play piano, I seem to remember, but Robin didn't play a thing, you know, with any, you know, verve or knowledge of the instrument. He had this melody, which is eventually completely changed, and Barry put it down himself with his acoustic, and said, okay, sing something like this. And that's how that kind of came about. And what was going to happen is probably going to be in the movie Saturday Night Fever. And it wasn't. It was one of those that could have made it, but it didn't. No cigar fault. You know? But it would have been great if it had been in that thing. It would have been great for me and great for them.
Absolutely.
But they wrote a million songs in that movie anyway.
Yep.
So that was, there was another band. I'm trying, not the Four Tops. I can't think of who it was, but they did a version. And I listened to it and I thought, well, mine's better.
Yeah.
Because I thought, Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I heard it and I thought, well, I think our version is better, you know. But it was a different, ours is more country, I think.
Okay.
You know? Did that song, both of those songs, acoustically. It was weird.
Wow.
But the people in the crowd liked it, you know.
Yeah. You ventured off a little bit on that song because it did have more of a kind of a, I wouldn't say disco, but it was very Bee Gees-ish, if you will. Like
when
people think of Graham Bonnet, they think of Rainbow, Michael Schenker, rock and roll, you know, the heavier stuff, right? Yeah. So you ventured off a little bit there, but, you know, like I said, it just goes to show you that if you're a talented singer, you can sing the phone book, and it really doesn't matter what genre of music you're singing. But I thought Warm Ride was a great sound and song. I really enjoyed that one, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was disco, real disco. By the time Barry got, you know, the arrangement together, I said to my manager, I don't want to do this. He said, it's really disco. He said, yeah, but look, what's happening now? It's everywhere, it's fucking disco. You know? So
around that time, for sure.
I think it turned out well, and I thank you for your...
Yeah, and to just say that you collaborated with such magnificent songwriters as those three brothers. I think they're probably, if not the best, some of the best that, you know, of my time for sure. Right. Those guys couldn't fuck a song up. Like everything was a hit to them. It seemed like, and just wrote some great music. And it's a shame that three of the four brothers are gone now, and there won't ever be probably, you know, nothing new from the Bee Gees, but that's a whole nother story in itself. But I did want to jump ahead in the time machine a little bit. Fast forward to today, a brand new record is out from the Graham Bonnet Band. Congrats on the release. If I'm not mistaken, this is your third album with the Graham Bonnet Band. Am I correct there?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the record is titled A Day Out in Nowhere, and it's an 11-song LP. And I did want to feature a song off the new record called Brave New World. And if we can take a listen to that one and come back and chat about that,
okay,
that would be great. Stand by.
Yeah.
Great tune there, Graham. I really like that. And being this music savant that I've always been from a young kid, I was the kid that went out and bought a record and didn't even listen to the music. I read the liner notes first because I was just more interested in the details around the music. I wanted to pick your brain a little bit on that song. What inspired Brave New World for you?
Well, I was, of all things, watching TV. There was... How unusual, Graham. I'm always watching TV, but
right.
The TV is my friend.
Okay.
It speaks to me.
Right.
Living on my own too long. Yeah, well, I was watching TV and this kind of porno thing came on. And I'm seeing this rubber suit and the hat, I mean, the head part and the whole thing. This woman's dressing up in it. And that's where the idea came from, because it's about the girlfriend saying to her boyfriend, "Let's try something different." So she's got this latex suit on.
Really?
And that's something different.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. That's what it's about, plain and simple. So it's a bit kinky.
Yeah.
And that's what inspired me. It was like, suddenly saw this on TV. I thought, that's a great idea. So, his girlfriend comes and said, "Hey, how about this?" And he goes, "What the fuck is that?" a surprise. And then... the lust that follows.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, basically.
It's so cool how you pick up inspiration. And most people, if they never ask you about that song, would not have a damn clue. But, what was on your mind? And for some reason, it went back to, it reminded me of where Steely Dan got their name from. If you don't know that story, they were in a hotel room. The TV was on. There was a porno movie on the TV back when you could rent the porno movies in the hotels. And the vibrator that the girl was using was called a Steely Dan. And that is where they got their name from. Yeah. So there's some trivia for you for the day. You can thank me later for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the cover of the new record. And we talked a little bit. This is not the cover. I'm showing you the back of the vinyl that I have. But you're pictured with a male and a female artist on the record, right? Share with the listeners who the musicians are on the back cover. And is this your core, Graham, the core of the Graham Bonnet Band? Because I think there was five people in your band at one time, right? And maybe you tour with five people. But talk about the players and why there's not five and there's only three. Or four, or however many you had.
Yeah, well, this, as I was saying before, this is part of the family group. The three of us have known each other for 10 years, and we just gel. And Bethany is the bass player. I'm the singer. And, of course, Conrado is the guitar player. And we wanted to do it. Well, after we had that thing happen to us, I think Bethany explained it. It was fired from our band for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. Years ago, and we got him back. We found out a lot of lies were going around, and people were just manipulating me and Bethany. And anyway, that's a whole story. That's another thing. But the three of us together are a great team, I think. Me and Conrad, when we get in the studio and start, playing parts and saying, "Well, let's do this and let's do that," Conrad's always very supportive of what I write. He sometimes changes some of the chords, but that is the basic the center of the band. It's the three of us.
Okay.
And then on the road, we have, you know, a keyboard player and obviously a drummer,
okay.
You know, which we have at the moment, but I don't know how long they'll stay with us. We're, okay. Because we're playing in England very soon. And I'm not sure, you know, everybody floats around. Everybody's in 20 fucking bands, you know.
Yes.
It's not the same as it used to be, you know. It's
yes.
Not like the Beatles days, you know.
That's correct.
We're all friends. And, hey, let's go back. You know, it's not like that anymore. And everybody's struggling in this music business. The music's great, but the business is crap, mm-hmm. as it always sounds to me. So that's, at the moment, we have Carl Hughes is playing drums. And we have Danny O, who's a great keyboard player. And so we have, at the moment, that's the way it stands. So there will be five people on stage, but this is the core of the band, this okay. the three of us.
Yeah.
And what will happen with the band after we go out? I don't know. I think it kind of depends on the reception we get, because we played some gigs a while back, a month ago or two, and it was very good. The reception was great. We had some great reviews and et cetera. We did four shows. One was like a festival, and that was real fun. And so I don't know, because people are so, it's so fickle, and it's all about sure. the money as well.
Yeah.
So how much we get for this,
yeah.
you know, and it's not like it used to be.
No.
I remember going out, you know, and getting money like you wouldn't believe in my pocket. And now it's like you got to share that money that went in my pocket with some of the guys in the band.
Yeah.
And it's not good. It
no.
really isn't good.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the club dates are, you know, a bit iffy. I'm not sure who will stay. I think probably Kyle Hughes might stay, the drummer. He's 25. He's very young, very good. But I think he might stay. But you never know, because he's looking for, I hate to say it, a stepping stone to something better.
Yeah.
Which has happened to me over and over with Steve Vai. He got it's the money.
Yeah.
He went to a, you know, fucking David Lee Roth, Whitesnake, whatever. And Inge, huge career by himself.
Yeah.
You know, they went on to better things. And that's what I feel may happen with this. It might not.
Yeah.
But he's a young man, and that's what happens. Oh, if I get good reviews for this,
yeah.
then I can, you know, say to another band, do you want me as your drummer, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
He'll get people calling him up. I mean, I don't know. I don't
sure.
know. But I just have that feeling that that's probably what will happen.
Well, you are
that's
right.
I think we'll have another drummer, probably not a different keyboard player, I don't know yet. But we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right about that, because I've had a few people on my show. Michael Sweet from Striper is one of them. Joel Hoekstra from Whitesnake is another. And they're both playing in like three or four different bands right now, right?
Yeah.
Michael has Striper.
Yeah.
He has Iconic, you know, where he's playing with Joel and a couple of other guys. And it seems like a lot of the musicians these days, like back in the 80s, I say in the 80s, if you were Whitesnake, that was it. You were just in Whitesnake, but now these guys are in what yeah. you said. They're in two or three different outfits,
yeah.
and they're all a little different from one another,
yeah.
right? And it's a way to, it's a money-making thing, right? I mean, it's a
yeah,
business
yeah,
at
absolutely.
The end of the day.
Well, look at Deep Purple. It's no longer Deep Purple, really.
Right, yeah.
You know? Without Richie Blackmore, it's not Deep Purple.
Yeah.
He's the main guy.
Yeah.
You know, and John Lord, of course, which we mourn.
Yeah.
You know, John, but Don and John,
mm-hmm.
those guys, best keyboard players in the world, really.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's a revolving door, or it always is. Yeah, who's in the band this week, you know?
Exactly.
And we don't all live in the same fucking country.
I mean, you're just sending tracks to each other, recording and doing it, you know,
yeah.
you know, sending files, right? That's the way it's all done.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Can we find somebody here? Oh, God. You know, whatever. You know, it goes on and on. But the band is really good now. We got, as I said, we got a good reception when we played in England a couple of months ago. And I'm just thinking, I hope it stays that way.
Yeah.
Because they like the people in the band. They identify very much with Bethany. They love mm-hmm. her. And Comrade, of course, with his big hair. I mean, those two are the main, and me, are the main focal point, I think. But it would be nice to have a band that actually stays together.
Sure.
But, you know, I was in fucking two bands at one point.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because it's about the money.
Yeah.
And now there is no fucking money.
Right.
So you have to get in 20 bands to make a reasonable pay package.
It's watered down for sure. I wanted to share one more quick clip off of the new record. The song's called 12 Steps to Heaven. We'll listen to that and come back and chat real quick about that one, okay?
Okay.
Another great track off the record entitled Day Out in Nowhere. Great song, Graham, and a great driving song. You could hear that good double bass working in that song. Yeah. Great job there. Now, this effort was put out by Frontiers, correct? I'm curious how long you've been working with Frontiers Records. Have all three of those efforts from Graham Bonnet Band come from Frontiers?
Yeah. It's a few years, 10 years maybe.
Okay.
Maybe 8 years, almost.
Okay.
8 to 10 years, I guess.
Okay. Well, I've had quite a few of the Frontiers artists on my show. Johnny Gioeli, I think, you know, Chip's Enough from Enough's Enough. And, of course, Michael Sweet from Striper has been on the show. And it seems like I've had quite a few of the Frontiers line up there. So that's great. I'm glad to add you to the fold.
Thank you.
Yes. Besides the new record, is there anything else exciting to share from the Graham Bonnet camp as it relates to, you know, tour, new projects, collaborations, anything to share there with the listeners?
Okay, well, this is kind of a touchy one. I am going to have a band called Alcatraz. Graham Bonnet's Alcatraz. The other guys are going out as Alcatraz. We're having a fight over this at the moment. You know, who's going to take the name, you know, lawyers, blah, 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 blah. We're having it's a shitty thing that's going on. And I said to them, well, you can go out. I don't mind you go out with Alcatraz, but they don't want me to do it. So if I call it Graham Bonnet's Alcatraz, then I can do it. I've been speaking, I've written 6 songs already with a guitar player called Jeff Loomis. Do you know who he is?
I haven't heard of him, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's a really heavy guitar player.
Is he here? Is he here in the States, or is he UK based, or where is he?
He's on tour at the moment.
Yeah, so he's the one working with you in the Graham Bonnet's Alcatraz. Is that correct?
Yeah, it would be that. So the other guys, they can do what they want. But so that's, I've written 6 songs, which are kind of heavy, kind of good. Mm-hmm. We have another 4 to write. He's still on tour with Nevermore or the other band. It's the other band called, I can't. It's Nevermore. It's like a growly band.
One of them, the metal, the death metal.
Whatever the hell it is, And he's a heavy player, but he's very, very melody oriented. His songs are very, you know, I can, as soon as he plays me something or he sends me something, I can hear the melody in my head, but what it should be. You know, he comes to the chorus, and when he plays a chorus, he has a great melody for choruses. So what I do is I do a counter to the chorus melody.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm not singing what he's playing, but it fits under my melody perfectly.
Okay.
With luck.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, but that's what will be happening. And that will be me and Conrad working on the vocals. And that's kind of what's going on now. And we hope that this band can get more gigs here. We need more in the States. We can never play anywhere here.
Yeah.
Unless we go to, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of Timbuktu or something, you know. We're just not popular.
Yeah.
Even though people like who we are. It's just not on, on the register.
It's
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's changed. You know, back in the 80s, the 70s, the 80s, you know, the big rock bands coming to town was always the big draw. But now it's, you know, if you're not a Justin Timberlake or a, it's more pop now, you know, it's Taylor Swift, Justin Timberlake, Bruno Mars. If you're not in that genre of music, you know, unless you're, you know, guys like Elton John or something that's going around doing these large stadium things, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's just, it's different. And I'm a local musician here that doesn't make a living per se playing music, but I've seen the music, how it's changed over the years from the 80s to even it is now. So I could only imagine the impact that you might feel from it, right? And surely you've seen it change dramatically over the years that you've spent in it, right?
I mean, I tell you something, I don't like to listen to music from now because I don't want to be influenced by it and try to be like that.
Okay,
you know? I remember Rob did this, you know, with his, he did a, what was his band called? I forgot what it's called now. Rob, you know, Judas Priest, Rob.
Rob Halford.
Yeah, what was that? He had a band.
Well, he was in his own band called Halford, right?
Yeah, what was it? Years ago, he did a heavy band of, and it was really different, and it didn't work. He was trying to be, you know, fashionable.
Okay.
He was trying to follow what everybody else was doing, and it didn't work.
Okay.
He should just be himself, you know.
Sure.
Anyway, he's back to being himself.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. You can't do that. That's why I never listened to it. I have heard things, and it's just like, well, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't hear music anymore.
Yeah.
On anything.
Yeah.
And I've heard, you know, my kids play it, and but my kids are Beatles fans as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, there's nothing that impresses me anymore.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the day that another Queen comes out, you know, Queen of the band.
Yes.
I remember hearing that going, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, but as soon as that, I'm like, that is fucking good.
Yeah.
Something like that has got to happen again, or another Beatles. I don't see another Beatles.
Were you a big Queen fan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't buy the albums, but
sure,
I got all the Beatles albums, of course.
Yeah.
And, the Beatles changed the world.
Oh yeah.
The hairstyles.
Yeah.
The clothes we wore, the things we said sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's they changed the music business. I remember playing the EP, a Twist and Shout EP, and my mom was home, and I played it on the radio. She said, what's that? I said, it's a band called the Beatles. I said, well, they can't sing. You know, and it sort of became, well, if the Beatles can do it, so can I. You know, your ordinary Joe working in a, well, their voice is on that good. Oh, yeah, I can do that. So it became very much, all bands came from Liverpool all of a sudden. They're all from Liverpool.
Yeah.
With fake Liverpool accents. Hello, hey, how are you doing, Wack? You all right? You know, fucking great here, isn't it? I like it. Hey, John, pass me that, will you? You know, it was all like that. Suddenly, everybody's... But it's, you know, it was like that because they were almost like a folk group, if you will. But it did become, you know, you think about Eleanor Rigby and, you know, Strawberry Fields. Those songs are fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They are... It's folk music, but they're telling you a story about a real place.
Sure.
You know.
Penny Lane. Yeah, all of those places.
Penny Lane, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's something that I try to, you know, take from reality.
Yep. Where can the listeners find Graham Bonnet on social media?
I don't know.
I had a feeling you were going to respond like that, right? You probably let somebody else handle all of that, right?
I don't know. Just Google the Graham Bonnet Band. You'll find it.
Okay.
We're on YouTube. As you've got two videos on YouTube from the album, the new album. Yeah, Google that. If you see those two songs, you'll be all right, I think.
Okay.
That gives you a taste of what we're doing now.
I will also go out and do that research for you and make sure that when I drop this episode on my show that it has the links to as much of the Graham Bonnet Band's social media as I can find, so the listeners know how to buy your records and find out where you're playing and all of those good things.
Okay.
Graham, listen, thanks so much for being so gracious with your time and your stories. You're a revered vocalist and one of the most versatile vocalists of our time, as far as I'm concerned. This has been a true pleasure. So thank you this went a little bit longer than 30 minutes, and I had a good feeling that it was going to, Graham. You can't tell your story in 30 minutes, and you should know that, right?
I do ramble a bit, yeah, but anyway.
I think
I got my point across.
Yeah, good stories.
All right.
As always, I ask the listeners to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. Also, make sure to follow Graham on all his social media outlets. Again, you can find the show here on Facebook at Backstage Pass Radio Podcast, on Instagram at Backstage Pass Radio, on Twitter, Backstage Pass PC, and on the website at BackstagePassRadio.com. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning into the show. You guys remember to take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you right back here on the next episode of Backstage Pass Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Backstage Pass Radio. Make sure to follow Randy on Facebook and Instagram at Randy Halsey Music and on Twitter at R Halsey Music. Also, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on alerts for upcoming podcasts. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to share the link with a friend and tell them Backstage Pass Radio is the best show on the web for everything music. We'll see you next time right here on Backstage Pass Radio.